Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. This episode is dropping slightly earlier in your feeds than you might have expected, but that's because this week is the Europa League final. We've got a special episode previewing that game between Sevilla and Roma, which will take place in Budapest. It's all very exciting, very, very exciting. And my name is Jack Collins. I'll be your host today, talking about my favourite competition in the entire world. I'm joined by the rank god, Mr. Sam Tai. How you doing, mate?
Yes, very well. Thank you, mate. Always a pleasure to talk to you about Europa League football. I rely on you just as much as our listeners do and those in world football, because I tend to play a bit of football on Thursdays, don't I? And then catch the rest of it in the pub afterwards, whereas you're sat there with your notebook, your six screens, furiously scribbling, analysing, scouting, got the data on one side, got the footage on the other. You do a great job. You do a great service to us all, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you today.
Yeah, no, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Later on in this episode, we're going to be talking to some experts from either team. We've got John Solano, Italian football journalist and editor of AS Roma Press, talking to us about three reasons why Roma will win the competition, and David Cartledge of ESPN FC and the Football Rambles on the Continent, talking to us about Sevilla and their expectations and reasons why they will win the league. So we'll look at this under both of those spotlights. But before we do so, Sam, I think probably it's best to just maybe get a bit more of a general sense of where these two are.
Yeah, and I think that the right person to do that is you, mate. So I think we should flip the script a little bit here. You're the world's leading foremost authority on the Europa League. So rather than you ask me the question, how did Sevilla get here? How did Roma get here? I'm going to ask you the same question, and I'd like you to start with Sevilla, please, because they're technically the home side, although that obviously doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I don't know how that actually works out, but I do think that Sevilla should be allowed to be the home side, in inverted commas, in any sort of Europa League tie that they play, just out of like respect, like begrudging respect. Exactly. It's like Real Madrid. They should always be home side in the Champions League. Sevilla, let's be quite frank, we're quite lucky to get here, because their campaign started in the Champions League, where they were drawn in Group G alongside Manchester City, Borussia Dortmund and Copenhagen. They got absolutely slammed first game by Man City. It feels so long ago, that, doesn't it? 6th of September, yeah. It was. Crazy. They lost 4-0. Haaland scored twice. Shock, horror. Foden scored. Diaz scored. They were absolutely fundamentally dismembered by Manchester City in the Pithuan as well. Out at home, you're looking at this going, oh, that doesn't look good. You know, Lopetegui is still in charge at this point of this severe season. They've gone through three managers this season. None of them, well, the first two really didn't work out. And Mendilibar has come in and really turned the ship around and righted a lot of the wrongs that had gone on in this severe season. They then went to Copenhagen and played at Parken, and they drew 0-0. I think it was their first clean sheet of the season. They were incredibly lucky to come out of this game with a point. Now, they didn't create anything. I remember watching this game and being like, oh, Sevilla have lost all of their attacking spark. Weirdly, their best player this night was Isco. And that feels like ages ago as well,
goodness,
doesn't it?
Me.
Like,
are you sure we're in the right season?
Exactly, exactly. It does feel like that, doesn't it? But, you know, Copenhagen were just lacking a little bit of that cutting edge. Then they went, you know, Borussia Dortmund came to the pith one and hammered them 4-1. And things were looking very, very uncomfortable. Now, at this point, Sevilla were languishing in the relegation places in La Liga. Most people, you know, this is September, October, were like, okay, they'll sort themselves out. They'll claw themselves out of it. They didn't for a long, long time. Now, they have now. They're going to probably finish in the top half in La Liga. But at the time, it was like, wow, Sevilla are actually in real trouble. And I remember watching that league and going, Sevilla and Valencia are down the bottom of it. That is not comfortable viewing.
Yeah, they were bottom three for like a good 4 months, weren't they? It was an uncomfortable amount of time if you are Sevilla. And obviously, this is a team we're so accustomed to watching challenging at the sharp end of European competitions and winning trophies. You know, they tend to get to the final and they tend to win it. So as a result of that, you know, they tend to finish top six. They've been consistently challenging. I mean, it really wasn't very long ago that, you know, 10% of people might have said there could be a title challenge on here from Sevilla. They were maybe the next best placed team, even ahead of Atletico Madrid a couple of years ago, to challenge Real Madrid and Barcelona for a title. I don't think anyone realistically expected that, but this was back in the Jules Koundé era. They had Diego Carlos, Fernando in his prime, and they were a very, very good team. And so to see them drop to 19th and really play like they belonged in 19th for a good half season was pretty worrying. And it definitely leaked into the Champions League campaign. They did not win any of their first four games. They did beat Copenhagen 3-0 in the fifth Champions League game. And along with two draws, that was the thing that managed to claw them in to European football on the other side of the World Cup into the Europa League, wasn't it? That one win did it.
Well, actually, you know, you kind of talk about that. And there are a couple of big things, I think, here, because the next match week, they went to Dortmund and scrapped out a draw. Now, again, they were very lucky to come out with anything. Dortmund battered them in this game. And it did feel like Sevilla had clung on for a point. At the same point, Copenhagen were clinging on for a point against City. And it was like, if Dortmund score here, Copenhagen will go above Sevilla in this thing. And I wonder where that leaves them as they come into clash with each other next week at the pith one. As it was, you know, Sevilla stayed in third in the group and then, you know, basically compounded that by the fact that they won 3-0 against Copenhagen. It was one of their first really good performances of the season, that. And it was a massive one in the context of where we are now, because just the week after they went to City, they took the lead actually, but they eventually lost 3-1. And Copenhagen very nearly beat Dortmund. It was one of those very strange ones at Parken where Dortmund went ahead, Thorgan Hazard scored. Like, what?
Oh my God, he doesn't play for them anymore.
He doesn't play for them anymore. Exactly. And you kind of look at all the different bits of it and you're thinking, Copenhagen score there and Sevilla haven't got that point at Dortmund. Things are looking very different. And I think that a lot of people would have looked at this and been, they were lucky is maybe a stretch considering they won 3-0 against Copenhagen. But they left this a lot tighter than they would have expected and hoped in terms of at least being the third best side in this group.
This is just instinct kicking in, wasn't it? You know, they saw an opportunity, they sensed a chance to slip into the Europa League and thought, we'll be taking that, thank you very much, this is our competition.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, so then they went into the knockout round for the Europa League. They played PSV Eindhoven in that round, and I think a lot of us were expecting PSV to come out and be really impressive. Sevilla were unbelievable in this first leg. They won 3-0 at the pith one. And it was like, okay, right, Sevilla have reached Europa League and suddenly they've found form. Fine, no worries. No, everyone's chilling. This was still in the San Paolo era, right? So look at that and going, okay, fine. And then they went to Eindhoven and made it really, really uncomfortable for themselves. They lost 2-0. Now, you know, the second goal of these was in the 95th minute. But it was one-way traffic. And PSV at the end were really, really upset about it. I remember watching them and it was real head in hands moments. They missed an absolute shed load of chances to make this game interesting.
This is clearly a theme, right? If you look through these results that they've put together for the back half of the European campaign, 3-0 at home to PSV, then went and lost away. 2-0 at home to Fenerbahce in the next game, and then they lost 1-0 away. And of course, they go to Old Trafford, which we can come to in full. They draw at Old Trafford and then win 3-0 at home. So it's actually up until the point where they reached the semi-final against Juventus, it's three straight home clean sheets against PSV, Fenerbahce and Man United. Often the first leg comes at home. They do enough and then they hang on for dear life in the second and do just enough to qualify. It's always been squeaky, except for that second leg against Man United.
But this is it. So the kind of strange bit about this is that aggregate score, 5-2 to Sevilla against United, looks massive. It looks like a comprehensive victory. But until the 84th minute of the first leg, Sevilla weren't in the tie at all. It was absolutely one-way traffic. United had them exactly where they want them. After 20 minutes, Sabitzer had scored a brace. United were 2-0 up. They should have scored more. Antony hit the post. You know, they had a couple of big opportunities squandered. Weghorst somehow tried to shoot or somehow laid it off for Terrell Malacia when he had the goal at his mercy. There was loads about this. You were like, United should have been 4-0 up after the first leg. Instead, two own goals, it's 2-2, and Sevilla took full advantage. Now, look, they might have gone and hammered United at the Pith one anyway, but they shouldn't have been in the tie. And then to go and absolutely dispatch them in the way that they did.
Yeah, it's the David De Gea error game as well, isn't it? Which has been made so much of. It's one of the most notable points of Man United's season, and it's Sevilla coming out the right side of it.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, look, that second leg, very, very impressive. One of the moments, I think, of the season, and definitely Sevilla's best moment of the season so far, at the very least. They then went into this tie against Juventus. They were brilliant in the first leg in Turin and didn't deserve to come away not having won that tie, I didn't think. Juventus scored in the 97th minute with Federico Gatti, but mostly I thought Sevilla were very good value for that. The second leg was tighter and more of an, you know, more of a sort of weird basketball game in many ways. Tighter in not in terms of how the game played out, but actually in terms of that both teams had loads and loads and loads of chances. And, you know, Juve took the lead and you're going, okay, how does Sevilla
come back
from this?
I thought when Vlahovic took the lead there, I thought this game was finished. 65 minutes on the clock and he gives them the lead in that game setting. I thought this finally is it for Sevilla, but somehow they found it again, didn't they?
They found a way. And that's what they've done in this competition. And they find themselves in a Europa League final once again. Fun fact, Sevilla, once they've got through the quarterfinals of the Europa League, they've gone on to win it every single time.
That bodes well.
Does bode well.
For Sevilla.
Sevilla, at the very
least. Not for Roma.
Let's talk about Roma, shall we?
Yeah, let's talk about Roma. I mean, they've been in the Europa League the entire time.
Which is usually a good sign because 9 of the last 11 winners started in the competition. The problem is that the outliers in this are Sevilla.
Yes, that's the problem, isn't it? And I think Roma have been really put through the mill here. We could talk about it in a little bit more detail, but just as a cursory glance at the fixture list, for those that don't know, they landed in a group with Real Betis, which makes it tough. The other two opponents, not so much, but they lost the opening game of this group against Ludogorets. It was not a good result. And
especially because they equalized, right? It was 1-0 to Ludogorets.
So
in
weird,
Bulgaria.
Wasn't it?
They equalized in the 86th minute and then Ludogorets just literally went down the other side and scored a winner. Ludogorets, my favorite name in football because it's an anagram of good result.
It is indeed. So obviously you expect Roma and Real Betis to qualify from this group. But not only that, you expect Roma to absolutely hammer Ludogorets and HJK, who are from Finland. And it didn't necessarily play out like this. I mean, they beat HJK 3-0 at home, fine. But the other results and the other games were a bit more difficult. They conceded to Ludogorets in both games, lost one of them, conceded to HJK away. These are the sorts of games that, fairly or unfairly, on paper, as a football fan, you look and go, 4-0 to Roma, guaranteed. And three of the four of them were absolutely nothing like that.
Yeah, 100%. And to be honest, Betis went to the Olympico and won, and then they held them in Seville. So you're looking at that and thinking, well, Betis won this group. It meant that they went straight to the round of 16. Roma had to go through the playoffs. But Roma were a bit iffy in the group stages of the Europa League, and in a way that I don't think anybody was expecting to. And you look at the goal scorers from across this, right, sure, Shomurodov scores at Ludogorets, but you know, this is Dybala, it's Pellegrini. Belotti played a fair bit in the group stages, which has been a slight downside on Roma's campaign. But, you know, Abraham scores against HJK. These are not secondary bit part players. These were Roma sides who were put out to win. And I think that was the most terrifying part of it. It wasn't like, okay, Roma have gone to Ludogorets, thrown a second string 11 out there and hope for the best. this was a good Roma side that should have been beating Ludogorets. Now, Ludogorets probably are a better side than people give them credit for. I will give them that. But still, this is
come on,
this
guys.
It's not the same. These levels are very different, and that's, you know, it's important. Yeah. Roma had to go to, you know, they had to beat. They didn't have to go to. They had to have Ludogorets at the Olympico on the last day. And they were on the same points. They were both on 7 points on that final day. And you were like, okay, what's going to happen here? And then Ludogorets took the lead. Like, there were these moments. Yes, Roma bounced back. Fine. They got 2 penalties. Pellegrini scored them both. Zaniolo put some gloss on it. But at one point, you were looking at it going, I don't like that at all. Like, I really don't like how this is playing out. But
it's a strange one, isn't it? Because we always, whenever we come out of the groups and we try to, you know, maybe try to project, okay, well, who do you think is going to go all the way? And we try to use the group stage often as a barometer for performance. Yeah. And both of these two clubs that we're talking about here, Sevilla and Roma, are both screaming at us, ignore the groups, it doesn't matter. Because neither of them did particularly well in the first half of the year here, particularly in European competition. But they've made it all the way through this gauntlet. And from Roma's perspective, the cost of not winning the group, I mean, in the end, it's okay. They've got to the final. But let's be honest. When they get to that playoff, they get to the playoff and they draw Salzburg and you're like, uh-oh, yeah. Right? That's really concerning.
100%. And I think that, you know, it played out. Look, Roma were the better side in Salzburg, I thought, and they lost to an 88th minute winner from RB. So it was a bit of a tricky one to kind of deal with in that regard. They turned it around at home in the second leg. This then became their theme. Right. So the next round, they drew Real Sociedad. They won at home and they were excellent, to be fair, that day as well. And then they went to San Sebastian and weren't excellent, but they kept a clean sheet. And suddenly you're starting to see the Mourinho grind. And out of nowhere, it's like, OK, we're starting to see what Roma can do from a defensive point of view. They kept Real Sociedad at bay, didn't let them score over two legs. You know, they then went to Feyenoord. They lost 1-0 in the first leg. They turned it around after extra time in a very strange game.
They missed a penalty in the first leg, didn't they?
They did, but it wasn't a penalty.
A really good chance.
It wasn't a penalty. Up. So it was one of those ones where you're like, okay, I don't mind you missing that because it shouldn't have been a penalty in the first leg.
Yeah, justice.
But, you know, then they tie up the tie. Spinazzola scores, quite a scrappy goal against Feyenoord. And then Paixão drops in. You're like, oh, okay, 80th minute. They're really struggling. Dybala turns it on as a wonderful goal. And to be fair, in extra time, Roma see it through.
They run riot in extra time, don't they? Because it just breaks open with that goal. Yeah.
The goal broke Feyenoord. Dybala, you know, one to send it to extra time, just broke Feyenoord hearts. You could see it.
Yeah.
And they never recovered from that. And then, you know, the kind of flip of this is you get to the semi-final. They got Bayer Leverkusen. This is a Leverkusen side on the up under Xavi Alonso. They've been playing some really good football. And Roma just stifled them for two legs. Now, secondarily, in the second leg, and I'm sure John will talk about this later on in the Roma segment, so I'm not going to go into it in too much detail. But just to win 1-0 at home and then be like, you ain't getting past us, is the most Mourinho move of all time. And I was very impressed. It wasn't fun, but it was like...
Imagine what it was like for Roma fans, buddy, watching that. I mean,
imagine what it was like for Leverkusen fans. It must have been the most frustrating experience on earth. It was frustrating for me, and I had no real horse in the race. I was like, wow, this is... This
but
is
it's frustrating or it's terrifying. Neither are nice feelings. No one had a good time that night except Jose Mourinho.
Well, but Jose Mourinho had a good time, and that's the thing that matters, isn't it? That's the thing that matters. So that's how they both got here to the final. And with that, I think we should probably try and move it on to our interviews. We're going to start with Roma and John Solano, and then we're going to move to David Cartledge to talk about Sevilla. Welcome back to Ranks FC, where I'm delighted to say that we are now joined by the first of our special guests representing Roma in this Europa League final. We have Italian football journalist and editor of AS Roma Press, John Solano. John, thank you so much for coming on Ranks FC.
Thank you for having me. No, very excited.
Yeah, I'm very excited too. I'm very excited. And I'm very excited about seeing Roma in another European final. Sam and I were lucky enough to be out there in Tirana last year and had the most amazing time. And so I'm looking forward to seeing if Roma can make this back-to-back European trophies.
Yeah, we're not going this year, unfortunately. We've had our fun, haven't we? But we did have a wonderful time last time around.
Well, at least you made it there. My flight got stuck in Zurich for the final, so I watched it in a Swiss airport. So I'm glad.
Oh, man.
At least two two of the three of us got to enjoy it.
Well, that's it. You, so that's all that matters. Two. It should have been me and you, John. Get rid of Jack.
Yeah, that's, hey, that's okay. That's okay. This time around, though.
Yeah, this time you'll be there. You can even the score this time around.
Yeah, we'll see if they can make up for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, John, you're going to walk us through three reasons why Roma can win this final. I'm sure that people have seen much of Roma's season this year, but this is a side that started well, fallen off a tad in the last couple of weeks in terms of their Serie A form. But it does feel like when it comes to these type of competitions that Jose Mourinho just seems to get the job done.
Yeah, I mean, what you described in the recent league form, really, that is a metaphor of Roma for 20 years, more or less. They just seem to really lack the longevity when it comes to Serie A. Jose Mourinho has been saying this from the instant he arrived about the lack of depth. And really, and it's hard to disagree with him when he says this, that they just do not have the depth to do to competition. So you have to prioritize. And I don't really think you can argue with his approach to European finals in a row. Won the club's first European trophy in his first season. And I don't care if it's an inaugural competition in the third tier of the European competitions. A trophy is a trophy, and Roma have lost in far easier competitions. So the complaining and making a criticism of that, in my opinion, is short-sighted. But yeah, I mean, it has been a very, as it has for everybody, of course, with the World Cup, it's been a very awkward season. They, for all of the highs that they have had, they seem to negate any sort of goodwill that they build up with everybody. They'll beat Inter at San Siro and then, I don't know, lose to or drop points to Sassuolo at home. It's very weird, very, very weird. And I think ultimately that is the consequence of what he says. They just don't have the depth of a Inter, of a Juve. I mean, if you look at the teams that lack the depth, Roma have gone farther than them in Europe. And it does seem like, at least for the Italian clubs, that they've had to choose. Are you going to focus on the league or are you going to focus on Europe? We see what Napoli did. Can't argue with that. We see what, I won't say Inter have focused on Europe.
They focus on cups. That's what they say. Yeah, it's more than one cup.
Yeah. Inzaghi, it's hard to know. You can tell to me Inzaghi is closer to Pep, or you could tell me I don't know. We can think of so many terrible Italian managers, Malisani or something. I would be able to believe you either way. You would be able to convince me he's the best or the worst. I cannot, for having watched this guy for so long, I still cannot put my finger on as to whether or not he is actually a good manager. It's very weird to me.
Well, he keeps winning trophies, and that is the name of the game.
Right. So we will see how all three Italian teams that. That is something because everybody, particularly Serie A fans, they love to mention the coefficient for some reason. And it's hard to argue with the approach that the Italian clubs have had in Champions League, Europa League, Conference League. Yeah. Very eager to see Fiorentina. I don't know how they'll fare against it. David Moyes, West Ham. That seems like a very clash of styles.
It's the ultimate
styles.
Culture clash, this one, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. It's West Ham. It's about as pure Premier League bread and butter as you can get with your Scottish manager against beautiful, beautiful Florence and Fiorentina. But look, you say Italian clubs have had to prioritise, and clearly Jose Mourinho has prioritised European competition. Fortunately, that's definitely the one that we're talking about today. Otherwise, I'd feel a little bit silly. So can you give us the three reasons, 3-1? We'll go one by one as to why you think Roma can win it.
Okay, let's do it. So number three, and in my opinion, I don't think this can be discounted, but I think the fact that the experience that they have in this competition, coming back in difficult moments, I think that cannot be understated. So if we just want to simplify, number three reason, I will say the mentality.
Okay.
Jose Mourinho has really brought a different air to him, a different, I hate the word swag, but just a different approach and the attitude. We are so used to Roma. It is quite often an attitude of woe is me. Quite often we're, you know, at Roma, very much used to being the bridesmaid instead of the bride. There's always this sort of inferiority complex that you know, Juve, Milan, Inter, that you're just not, you're not at that top with them. So there always has been this ingrained underdog mentality. It's very weird. It's almost like afraid to embrace the ability, and that is something that Jose Mourinho has completely and entirely flipped on its head. The first one to come in here and say, no, it's Roma, you are a capital club in one of the biggest leagues in Europe, you're going to do well, we need to do well, we are going to win things. Hard to argue with those words that he said. It did seem like a pipe dream when he decided to come here to begin with. Unforeseen circumstance, just because they were close to going with Sarri. They had met with Sarri, and then to see Mourinho come, it was quite the shock. But I think the biggest thing, and you can't argue with it. You just compare him to a few years ago. Yeah, Roma in the Champions League final, they faced Liverpool. But I listen and I look at the way Jose Mourinho speaks, and I compare it to, this is a name from only just 5 years ago, but Eusebio Di Francesco. I mean, it is like watching a guy with, you know, the highest level of charisma versus a guy who is so, you know, timid and scared to even say the wrong thing in a press conference. I mean, their attitudes are just, it's night and day. It's incomparable. And I think Roma, before all else, they have needed that. You could find millions of interviews. Fabio Capello, he never misses a chance anytime he's on camera. When he's asked about Roma, he talks about the environment, the attitude, how the supporters don't know how to win in the city. And to an extent, that is true. However, I would say, too, a lot of that it has been incompetence at various levels. But the biggest thing that Jose Mourinho done has embraced the challenge that comes with playing in this very, very difficult environment that I think is only behind Madrid in terms of expectation. But you can make the case expectations relative to where they should be. They're never in accordance. But this level of confidence that he has brought, it's been a very welcome change. It's actually been incredibly weird to see. Very weird. And you guys know Jose Mourinho too. The thing I find fascinating of him is he will play and embrace that confidence, that mentality. But then he knows how to flip it in the opportune times where he says, oh, well, you know, this is Juventus. We're nowhere near the level of them. They, you know, they should beat us every single time. This is Inter. Oh my gosh, Milan, they're the defending champions. We have no chance. He'll do that at the most perfect time. I mean, he's very masterful with the mind games, but I think just in general, the mentality that he has brought. And if you look at their path that they have taken to get to this moment, I mean, they come back and they win. They win away in Spain to Real Sociedad. They defeat Feyenoord again in a very, very, very difficult away environment. And then what they pulled off in Germany without, the number of guys they've been missing during this path. Chris Smalling, he has been there sparingly. Paulo Dybala, the guy that was, you know, the face of the summer project, this new project, has been injured off and on really these past few months. And he has been able to get these results, missing their most important pieces. Tammy Abraham not being able to really find the form that he had last season. I mean, he goes to Germany and use whatever words you want to describe. You don't even have to have watched the match. Just go on to Yahoo, Google.
Oh, yeah. I've seen what Demi Bai has said. I've seen what Nadim Amiri has said about
the approach, whether or not it's football, would be the question I think the German sides would raise.
Right. Particularly in that second leg, I believe Bayern ended with 26 shots to Roma's one.
Mm-hmm.
Possession 80-20. Mm-hmm. I know that this sort of approach, it's probably going to be a bit more embraced, perhaps in Serie A versus like the Premier League. I mean, I can only imagine some of the comments that the guy would have gotten. I personally love it because I'm sick. I suppose very sick.
Well, do you want to win?
I enjoyed
or not,
that kind
is
of
the, is the question really?
Well, that's the question that Mourinho always poses, right? It doesn't matter how you win. I think there's a famous quote from Mourinho. He said, "There's a lot of poets in football, but poets don't win many trophies."
Yeah.
And I mean, it's quite antithesis to like my personal beliefs on football, but I do love Mourinho when he's in these, when Mourinho's not in the Premier League, I love Mourinho. That's my big line on the
fantastic.
Whole thing.
He's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, you can label it whatever you want. I mean, time is a very odd thing, but I still remember incredibly vividly his ink debt against Bayern. I mean, if anybody remembers that one, I'm not going to say what Roma did was an exact replica of it, because I'm in no way going to compare, the likes of Gianluca Mancini to Lucio or something. I'm not going to compare the players, but the approach was the same.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think it's as simple as this. Bayern over two legs, zero goals. Punto e basta. I don't know what else you need to say. You can complain of the approach, but ultimately, when it was teacher versus master, Xabi Alonso versus Jose Mourinho, I thought he put on a tactical masterclass. I have to say, I know very few will enjoy it, but the mentality he installed in this team to. You have a 1-0 aggregate lead. We are going to go to Germany and make it very clear that we're shutting up shop. Make them beat us, and they didn't. So it's hard to argue with that, in my opinion.
Yeah, you raised the question, and if they can't answer it, then that's very much them. And I think you're absolutely right. And Roma fans will have enjoyed it, which is the one thing Mourinho says that he always needs. You know, they're the people he's trying to impress. But with that, let's move on to number two, shall we, John?
Okay, so number two. Is the injuries. So Roma have been hammered by injuries throughout the entire year. However, in this moment, for this one-off match, I think they are going to get about as close as you can get to a fully healthy side. Mourinho has been saying, Paolo, Dybala, I'm not confident. I'm not hopeful he will be there. I think he's going to be there. He was going to be called up this past weekend to get some minutes into his legs. They decided against it. Smalling, he goes, well, I don't know if he's going to be there for the final. He ends up playing this weekend. So I think if they have those two, it really does change things. Now, again, if you're not watching Roma, you're going to hear Chris Smalling. How does that change things? If you haven't watched him at Roma, I can't stress enough how incredible he has been, and he is about to become a free agent. I think he's going to sign a renewal with Roma that should be announced relatively soon. But Juve wanted him. Inter wanted him. He's been superb for Roma. If he is there and healthy, and if you get Paulo Dybala for even half an hour, a top Paulo Dybala with carrying no injuries, I think that really does change the entire fixture, because if we're just looking at both of these teams, if you just want to pick out the singular best player between the two sides, obviously I'm biased, but I would say that is probably Paulo Dybala.
Yes.
With everybody being,
I think that's completely fair.
Given that Sevilla side is mostly made up of Argentinians anyway, and Dybala's the best Argentinian of the lot, I think that makes sense, mate. I think it does.
That's a good point.
And look, Smalling has been incredible. You know, center of the defense, middle of the back three, commanding, dominating the box, superb in that low block, superb in what basically Jose Mourinho wants him to do.
Right.
If you can keep games tight like that, and if you can put on that kind of defensive masterclass in a final, basically keep your end clean,
As they did in Tirana, right?
Like, I was about to say, you were in Tirana. That's what they did.
It's the same thing. And then what you're asking for is one moment of quality up front. And that's exactly what they did in Tirana anyway, because it was Nico Zaniolo who just managed to come up with the moment. Now, Dybala was not a Roma player back then, and Zaniolo is not now. But it's very easy to see a situation where you've got to say a very similar pattern of play, and Dybala steps into Zaniolo's shoes and does the same thing. I can see it.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it one more time, that Jesus built his church in Rome on St. Peter. Jose Mourinho built his church in Rome on Chris Smalling, and that's something that I will die. That's a hill I will die on, just to complete the biblical reference.
Right. Lovely.
I don't know if I have heard that one. I'm going to steal that, just so you know.
No worries.
I enjoy that one.
Okay. It's all yours. All right, cool. It takes us nicely on to number one then, please, John.
You have just said it. It's Jose Mourinho. If you had your choice, you're in the supermarket, and you can pick any of the fruits in front of you. Okay, you had to pick one. In Jose Mourinho, in a one-off match, in a final, final match, one game you have to win. Who are you going to pick? Jose Mourinho. The guy just finds a way. He finds a way to do it, and he does it in different he can do it in different ways. Yes, I know that they won away at Bayer, and as we just said, the way they won at Tirana. But if you just watch them throughout this season, some of their biggest games, it's not the ones where they're scoring just one goal. They come back against Milan. They draw 2-2. Again, they beat Inter in Milano. I think they scored 3 in that match. They can play in different ways when they need to. And that, I think, is the biggest sort of ace up the sleeve of Roma. You don't know what they are going to do because it's very different to see. But they feel comfortable, in my opinion, playing in both of these ways. If they need to sit back, they're okay with that. If they need to go out and get some goals, Mourinho just flips on the switch and they're able to do it. Ultimately, that is what the most frustrating part of this team is. You just look at, in these moments where they need to get goals or they need to defend against, I don't know, Sassuolo, Bologna, these teams where they just seem to trip up. But yet they managed to do it on the European stage, particularly away from Rome. And you're mind blown that they can't sustain this over the long term. I guess it's the blessing and the curse, I don't know, of Roma. But when it just comes to these one-off matches, a final, if you had to stake your flag into one single manager, whether or not you like the guy, I don't know if there are many people that you would choose above Jose Mourinho. And I think ultimately that is the thing that could tip this fixture. And I'm just hard pressed to think of, no matter who, if this was Sassuolo, if this was Bologna, if this was Genoa, whoever this was, if it was managed by Jose Mourinho, I would pick them, because the guy just, he finds a way to pull the rabbit out of the hat. And the fact that I'm even remotely confident coming into this, I guess, is a testament to the guy himself, because it's Roma. I always just expect the worst. But you look at what they have done this season, you look at what they have done, particularly in Europe. I don't want to say toss aside the league, because obviously that's a much higher sample size. But in these European tournaments, he has been outstanding. And I don't really think it says more than the fact that before he comes to Roma, 0 European trophies. He comes to Roma in his first 2 years, 1 European trophy and a chance at a second. I'm not going to argue with anything that he has done.
No, I can imagine. I mean, look, this is Mourinho's 6th European final. The last player to score against any of Mourinho's teams in a European final was Henrik Larsson for Celtic in May 2003. He has gone full four full finals without conceding a goal. That is nuts.
I did not know that.
That's nuts. That no one does that. That's over, obviously,
Henrik Larsson, five years
over two decades.
Celtic.
Yeah.
What was that? Is that Celtic Porto?
Celtic Porto.
Yeah.
In 03. The UEFA Cup final in 03. Like, that is some record.
Yeah.
And you just called it the UEFA Cup. I mean, even if you don't want to look up how long it's been, I mean, the fact it's called the UEFA Cup, look no further than that. But see, now you just put more confidence into my head. Now I'm, if this doesn't end up good,
you can come back for me.
I don't know.
I'm looking forward to seeing in my Google aggregator later an article from the Roma Press, which is the stunning statistic you didn't know that points to Roma victory. And it's going to be written by you.
It's absolutely coming. I mean, I all of this, even the quote of the St. Peter building his church on Christmas. I mean, that is, I will give you full credit, but for all of the appearances I'm going to have to do in the lead up and after, I just want you to know I am taking that. That is
more than welcome.
I might get that tattooed on my arm. that's incredible.
On that note, John, thank you so much for coming on today. Can you just let the listeners know where they can find you?
You can find me at AS Roma Press or at Solano_56. And romapress.net. That is where you can find us.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much and best of luck out there, John. I really hope
things go your way. Thank you guys. Thank you.
Welcome back to Ranks FC. I'm delighted to say that we're joined by our second special guest representing Sevilla this time around, Mr. David Carlidge, old friend of the pod, ESPN FC editor, football ramble special guest on the continent. What does this man not do? David, it's great to have you back, mate.
Nice to join you guys. I tell you what, I was so close to wearing a Betis shirt for this, but I thought I better not.
You've given the red and white stripe of River Plate. Yeah. It's at least the right colours. I mean, look, this is a great final, I think, David. And it's one of those where you look at it and you think, it feels Europa League, but it feels good. It feels comfortable. And I'm really, really excited for this matchup. Just kind of generally, it feels like Sevilla have come through the ringer this season and come out the other side of it. Now, obviously, from the other side of the City's perspective, that's not as pretty as perhaps it would have been if they were lounging in the bottom three. But it is impressive what Mendilibar has done with this Sevilla side.
Oh, unbelievable. We're talking, you know, season changing, season turning. I think Sevilla made some mistakes prior, you know, last summer and what have you, but it's almost like he's corrected them. He's corrected them all, and he's got them on a nice track now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny one because there were question marks when he came in. And I think you're looking at it and going, right, this is a man who is known for playing a pretty aggressive direct 4-4-2. It's not pretty all of the time. And a lot of the malaise, I suppose, around Sevilla with Lopetegui and then also, you know, with what came afterwards, was that it wasn't the right way of football. And so when the results weren't coming, people started to turn very quickly. And then I was like, wow, you've appointed another manager who doesn't play nice football. It's an interesting one. Yep. It's kind of worked.
Yeah, it really, really has. And like you touched on, I think Sevilla are one of those clubs, I think, and there's a few of them about, that are very much accustomed to playing this high energy, fluid, nice, attractive passing football. I think it started many, many years ago with Juan de Ramos, if you remember him, you know, and the great old Sevilla teams used to play. It was a very English brand of football in terms, you know, it was classic 4-4-2, up and down, a bit like Sir Alex Ferguson used to play with Man United. But my word, it was high energy, high attacking, and there were some lovely players in those teams, you know, your Caters, your Canutes, you know, like all of those type of players from that era were incredible for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, let's get into these reasons. Why can Sevilla win the Europa League? It feels like a redundant question in so many ways, isn't it? Like, why can Sevilla win the Europa League? Because they do it all the time. I'll let you work through these reasons 3-1, David.
Yeah. Number three for me is their style of football. I think if we look past, you know, if we looked at Mourinho in Europe over the years, he's relished playing a side that is the complete opposite to how he wants to play football and how he wants a team to set up. So these nice little nifty passing sides. So we take a look at the final last year with Feyenoord. Feyenoord wanted to get the ball on the floor, play around Roma, and just do their thing. And Mourinho was like, right, I'm going to relish stopping this. I don't even care if we play our football. I just want to stop this. This is great for me. But the thing is, he comes up against Sevilla, who aren't, you know, Mandela's approach isn't too dissimilar. He's gritty. He will dig in. He's not bothered about the fancy stuff. He's not bothered about the fluff. He wants to get that ball out wide. He wants to whip some crosses in. He wants to be some tough tackling in as well. And I think Mourinho is going to look at that and just be a bit like, oof, okay. So that's reason number three for me.
Yeah, so competition of no one wants the ball. Awesome.
Yeah. I'm really selling this. I promise you. Well, so I'm really, really selling this. Yeah, and number two, really, it's kind of linked. I'm almost cheating a bit here. But yeah, the Mandela Bar factor. Look, what he has done at Sevilla since he came in, he's turned everything around. Got the players back to, and you know, this is a very old adage, an old cliche thing, but he's got them back to basics. He's got them doing the simple things first. And I know that sounds very, you know, old school English sort of way, but sometimes it's required. Sometimes it's needed. Because Sevilla's season was getting on the verge of madcap under Sampaoli, as you'd expect to do under Sampaoli. And it was very much going that way. And they brought Mandela Bar in. Fans weren't happy. A lot of the media weren't happy as well. They were just like, oh, this is very un-Sevilla-like. I mean, fine, if Mandela Bar's at an Eibar or a team like that, I can understand it, but not Sevilla. But he's come in. He's got everybody working and people can see the work ethic there and just the way the players have risen to that. A bit of fight. And as we know, Andalusians like that in their teams. They want a bit of fight. They want a bit of scratching. They want a bit of scraping. And that's what it's about. So that's my second reason.
David, obviously they've all improved, haven't they, under Mandela Bar. The team performance, sure, but basically all of the individuals. But can you pick out for us the particular players that have really risen to the fore here and managed to put in the performances that have led to not only getting to this point and defeating a team like Juventus in the semi-final, which I think even with Sevilla's reputation, we weren't necessarily expecting, but has lifted them out of the mire in La Liga. And as I look at the table right now, they are ninth. I mean, that might change later as we record, but they are a mid-table team and they were desperate straits beforehand. So who's really stepped up?
I think in times of strife, you do look to your most experienced players. You do look to the ones you know who everybody should be looking to in the dressing room. And I genuinely think Ivan Rakitic has had a new lease of life. He's the sort of player you want to look to. And look, when he left Barcelona, that last year at Barcelona it was almost catastrophic. People were like, oh my God, this guy's finished. Jeez, he's going to end up in, you know, MLS, Saudi Arabia or wherever like that, you know. But he's had a new lease of life, energy. Again, he's quite a high energy player. You know, when you look at his career and everything, incredible work ethic, up and down, box to box. It's where he's always been about. So I'd pick him. I feel like everyone functions around him. If he's on it and he raises his game level, and especially in a final as well, which he's been in many games like this, he's going to be the person that you look to the most to really drive them on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I mean, there's that pivot, isn't there? You know, that we saw in that second leg against Juventus of Fernando and Rakitic.
Yeah.
Between them, it's like, we've seen everything you've ever done before. we know exactly what's coming at us. We know exactly what's going to happen here. All we're going to do is win the ball back, get the ball into the final third, and let the front three have a go at you. And then when you get to that front four, and you're talking, you know, the talents of Ocampos, of Oliver Torres, who's a player that is very much beloved here on Ranks FC for a long time. Brian Hill seems to have, you know, started again, and the series seems to be back. And then you're bringing Lamela, Papu off the bench. It's suddenly like, oh wow, Suso. These are players.
Game changes.
This is it. You've got six players there can play across the front, you know, the front of the three behind the striker, who are all capable of making things happen on their own. So if the shield is there, then everything seems to be kicking back off it.
Absolutely. Look, they are frustrating. You know, Lamela, Ocampos, Papu, these guys are frustrating. Of course they are. You know, they might try and beat an extra man. And you're like, oh, don't give it away there in the final third. an attack will break down. And you're like, oh, I'll get them off. But every now and then, they can just pluck something out of nowhere. As frustrating as they are, you know, Lamela and Ocampos especially, just something, they're the epitome of frustrating players. But they can just get you that extra something out of nowhere on a counter-attack or even a loose ball, a little bit of skill and they're in.
Yeah. How has Mandela Bar negotiated this defensive injury crisis in a way that the other managers simply have not? Because, okay, they've got a little bit healthier, But not that much, have they? Like, it's still been a bit of a disaster. And they've been without centre-backs all season long, whoever the manager has been.
Not because of injuries, it's because they don't have any centre-backs.
No, they're all injured, man. Well, half of them are injured anyway. Marcão has just not even played, really. But, yeah, you end up with Nemanja Gudel a centre-back half the time, Fernando dropping in as well. What has Mendilibar done to make this actually finally not a complete car crash?
Safety first. Like, genuinely, going back to that, just do the basics, be safe, nothing wild and nothing crazy. Sampaoli was, you know, he was hell-bent, as a lot of managers are, on playing out the back and in doing something like that. But Sevilla have no problem getting those balls into their fullbacks and just lifting one forward, bypassing midfield and just getting it straight into your forward line. They've got no problem doing that at all. And could have them in good stead against Roma as well. If they, you know, that they're not looking to have a 15-20 pass move put together. They're not bothered about that. They're happy to get it into the wide areas, into those attacking players we just mentioned, and allowing them to do something. My big concern just while we're on the defence is the fact that Acuña is going to miss this. And Acuña is such a big, big part of this team. And the fact that he's going to miss it through having the yellow cards, you know, that's really, really going to hurt them. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think Alex Tellez, you know, remembered so fondly as a legend at Man United, you know, of course, all his efforts there. He's in the Europa League final and it's going to be down to him. But hopefully, as Acuña, and the turning corner for Acuña was just giving him a bit more license in attack. And, you know, be aware of your defensive duties, support your fullback, of course. But, you know, we want to see you on the attack. And hopefully that's where Tellez can excel if he focuses on that part of his game, which has always been his strong point and not the defender.
Acuña's sending off was the most Marcus Acuña thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And you know when the referee's having second thoughts about it? He's booked him. I think it was either back chat on time wasting at the time. I can't remember which of the two it was off the top of my head. One of them was one was the other. And it took the yellow card out, booked him. And all the Juve players were like, you've already booked him. He's like, oh no. I wouldn't have done that if I'd realised I'd already booked him. And it's the moment you're like, oh no, he's out for the final. And we were talking about this with all of the semi-finals from all of the games in the Europa League, in the Conference League, in the Champions League. You get into that last 5 minutes, you're like, you're in control. Just don't get sent off. Just don't get sent off. Obviously, Acuña got sent off. And I was like, right, well, at least it's on brand, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, exactly. I respect that. I think it's probably the most Argentinian defender thing you could possibly ask for. And he went and did it. So there you go.
That's exactly what you want to say. Right, then that takes us nicely onto number one, shall we?
Number one, and we touched on this right at the start. Come on, it's their competition. It's as simple as that. This is where they come alive. I know it's a very easy one, but it is. There's a different feeling about them when they're in this competition. And you can see them all rise to it every year. And they've got an aura about them, I think, you know. And I think it'll carry them so, so much. They go in with a bit of confidence there and looking at the previous teams who've done it and looking at the previous situations as well of other teams, of the other Sevilla sides, might have not been, you know, brilliant in the league, might not be, you know, fighting right at the top in the league, but when it comes to Europa, it's different. Everything goes and they have a feeling it's their competition, and hopefully for them it doesn't fall the way of what happened with Real Madrid in the Champions League. You know, I know they thought the Champions League was their competition, so hopefully it's not a double blow for Spanish sides.
I was going to say, isn't it? It does feel like where Real Madrid have that sway in the Champions League, the Europa League is exactly Sevilla's domain. I mean, there's the other kind of big bonus here is that they were having such a bad season, and if they win this and they get into the Champions League, they're going to be looking down again at their neighbours down the road. And it's just one of those. So you're going, how has this happened? You look at the league table and the idea of Sevilla being back in the Champions League next season is like the kind of thing you're like, oh no. But equally, next season's Champions League, there's no dropping down to the Europa, so they can't take the easy route anymore.
Precisely. And I tell you what I compare the current Sevilla season to as well is if you look at Villarreal in that season, they won the Europa League under Emery. Their league form completely went out the window. They were doing well at the start of the season and then it just went off a cliff and they gradually just kept falling and falling down the league. And you could clearly see they'd sacked the league off entirely. They were like, right, no, we need to get this trophy. Little Villarreal, you know, we need to get this trophy there to show for all our good work we've done. And I think Sevilla will look at that as well and just say, like, look, don't let the league form, our position there, the battles we've been in there affect us too much. This is completely clean slate, you know. If we win this, it's been a massive, successful season once again.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, I think it's one of those. It's very similar to where West Ham are, right? In their season, in that they were battling relegation for long periods of it. And then suddenly the clouds have kind of parted and you're like, oh,
really European final. That's good.
Exactly.
That's loads of fun.
It's trophies at the end of the day. Look, like, people deride different trophies, your conference leagues, your league cups and things like that. But at the end of the day, football fans, you want to see your team lift a trophy. And that's what it's about at the end of the day. It doesn't matter what it is, you want to see them lift the trophy. Otherwise, what's the point? What are you going to see them for?
I think it's really interesting, this, because Jose Mourinho, 6 European finals, 6 wins. Sevilla never got past the quarterfinals of Europa League without winning it. It feels very irresistible force meets immovable object. Something has to give. And I have absolutely no idea what it is.
Yeah, no, exactly the same, really. Honestly, it's intriguing on that level. I think the styles of the two teams, as we pointed out, but also, as you say, something does have to give. It will have to give. So it'll be interesting to see which way it goes. And, you know, even though Betis are my boys, I want to see Sevilla lift it. I really do. I'd really, really love them to lift it.
I mean, I imagine in a year that's been quite dour for Spanish football, it would be something that people can cling on to. But indeed. Right, David, thank you so much for coming on. Just let the listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah, of course. Just Twitter. I don't tweet too much these days, but I do every now and then. So it's David Jacka, J-A-C-A. So if you want to follow, please, by all means.
Absolutely. David, thank you so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure having you on Ranks, and we'll see you very shortly.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Welcome back to Ranks AFC, and thank you so much to both David and John for their insights there. Very, very intriguing to hear things keyed in from a more kind of club-specific perspective. We are going to now take a little peek at how we think this one's going to play out, Sam. So maybe we just take a look at what we expect the teams to look like and then maybe examine a couple of the key battles.
Yeah, tricky one, because we're recording this end of the week, you know, ahead of a weekend of fixtures for both teams. No doubt about it, both of these teams are going to have this final on their minds. And unlike in the Premier League and a couple of other leagues, this is not the end of the season for Sevilla or Roma. It's smack bang in the middle of the final weekends of the season. It is not the last game that they will play, which jars with me a little bit timing-wise, I've got to say. Conference League final, Champions League final coming after the end of the season. I'm not quite sure why we're in this situation, but it is what it is. And for Sevilla, injuries allowing or permitting, etc., etc. So for Sevilla, it kind of feels like Mendilibar has settled on 9 players that he definitely wants to play, and then he kind of figures the other two out later. He's been in the job a couple of months now, and he's really steadied the ship, as David sort of explained to us, and that's involved, well, a new goalkeeper, which I didn't expect, Dimitrovic stepping in between the sticks, and it's involved Nemanja Gudel moving full-time to centre-back. We've seen the legend, Jesus Navas, at right-back a fair bit. Lamella is playing a role. I mean, he's got all these attacking midfielders that he can move in and out. And Brian Hill, on loan from Tottenham, has been a really important part of this. Youssef En-Nesyri has finally picked up in the league. What a World Cup he had, but what a terrible first half of the campaign he had. And Rakitic and Fernando, the old heads in midfield, as alluded to. Combined age of 70, by the way. Just quickly look that up in the break. Impressive stuff. They know a thing or two about finals, don't they? Rakitic and Fernando. And you're expecting roughly 4-2-3-1 with maybe Oli Torres in the attacking midfield position. And Alex Telles is going to have to play left back, isn't he? Because, as David said, Acuna's kind of blown it.
Yeah, the most Acuna moment of all time. Fantastic stuff. Everyone's enjoying themselves. But yeah, it's a very settled team, as you say. Yes, there are a couple of changes. I don't think it's going to affect how Sevilla have been playing. It's one of those strange ones in that they've really raised their game for big occasions. We saw them in the Europa League, you know, start to play much more aggressively. We're expecting direct from Mendilibar when he came in, right? But I think to actually suggest how they've played in the Europa League compared to how we've seen them sort of approach games in La Liga, I think they know that Europe is out of sight in that regard, right? They're not going to be able to catch Betis in 6th, 7th, and Osasuna a point behind them. So I'd be very surprised if Sevilla are that focused, you know, that focus now on trying to grab 7th.
No, it's just about avoiding injuries, isn't it, really?
So I think what we're seeing, you know, in the last couple of games, those two draws that have been the last two games as we record this, against Elche, and then the kind of 0-0 against Betis in the derby, which was a bit of a non-starter, which is a really, really rare thing, I think, for an El Gran Derby. I mean, obviously, there have been red cards in pretty much all the games because this is La Liga. But, you know, we've seen them more and more start to look at these games and think, okay, how is it going to play out? And Sevilla had to play 70 minutes of their game against Elche with 10 men. That is not ideal when you're trying to load up for a final. You know, and when you're kind of looking at how the changes have been made, we've seen a bit of Rekic as centre-back. We've seen Telles playing more at left-back with Acuna ahead of him, you know, in order to try and, I think, probably just rotate a little bit and also get Telles used to this team. So the amount of changes we see at the weekend, I think, would be really interesting. Obviously, you're listening to this in hindsight, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Rafa Mir start. I wouldn't be surprised to see Jesus Corona start. I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple of the youngsters get in, Gonzalo Montiel to start a right back, for example, just to give themselves a little bit of a breather before this on Wednesday.
One thing before we move on to Roma, did you know that, and most of the listeners won't know this because it's pretty specific knowledge, but you may not know either, Mendilibar coached three of the Sevilla players at Eibar. So it really shouldn't surprise us that Brian Hill has played such an important part, despite being, you know, so young and having to batter out, you know, Lamela and Papu Gomez and all these guys in the attacking midfield band. And I think if Joan Jordan had been fit, he would have been playing constantly as well. And that probably would have pushed Rakitic up a little bit higher and maybe been bad news for Oli Torres. But Joan Jordan has had an Achilles problem for the last couple of months and hasn't really been able to factor. Dimitrovic is the third player to have experience with Mendilibar. So the fact that he stepped in goal, I mean, it's a big move, isn't it, to change your goalkeeper, particularly when your starter is Bono, who had a really good World Cup again and has generally regarded as one of the better goalkeepers in La Liga. I appreciate he hadn't had the strongest season. Literally none of them had been any good, to be fair.
He's just a bit of a nut job. That's the thing with Bono. I like him loads, but he is just a bit mad. Mm.
So basically,
mad decisions.
You know, as David sort of talked about, it's been safety first for Mendilibar at Sevilla. And that has not just meant playing into the channels, playing a bit more direct, not building up as slowly or as riskily. It's also meant turning to a goalkeeper he has first-hand experience with and making a change between the sticks. So Marko Dimitrovic living a second life out of nowhere. It's been a fun story.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right, let's go over to Roma then, because injury issues haven't abated, as John pointed out, but they are eased a tad, I would say.
Well, they hope so. Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of waiting to see what happens. I mean, how much of this is smoke and mirrors? How much of this is true? How fit is Paulo Dybala? And what kind of role can he play in this game? Even John doesn't know as we speak today.
I don't think he'll start. I think it would be absolutely mad if Dybala started this game. Now, we've seen Mourinho pull a fast one before, but
yeah,
he's saying, I mean, he's not training with them at the moment. So
he missed,
like, okay,
Henrik Mkhitaryan, didn't he, last year for the final and came off after 20 minutes. So he has done this kind of thing before. But if I'm Mourinho here, I'm not. I'm saving Dybala's I'm saving his magic for the last 30 minutes, or maybe for extra time if it gets there, because I have other options, don't I? You know, I have Pellegrini in the attacking band. I have Stefan El Shaarawy, who can
he's
play
playing beautifully well at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, he has gone to a front two at times, and that can work as well. It could, like, we're going to have another discussion here about Tammy or Belotti. Why not both? to a degree, if you can't get Dybala into the team as a starter and maybe you want to play El Shaarawy as wing back, there's room for Tammy and Belotti. It would upset me, but there is a case for it. And that would include three in midfield, where I expect Cristante to return because Smalling is back into the defence. Matic will, of course, join him. And then if Eduardo Bove gets left out, he'd have every right to be really upset about that because he's played a pretty important role in getting Roma to this point.
He scored the decisive goal in the semi-final.
Exactly. So, but my instinct tells me that Bove, despite having a very good end of the season and playing an important role as a youngster, I think my instinct tells me he misses out because there are players like Wijnaldum trying to get in this team. Mm. And like, you're in a cup final. Who are you going to turn to? I personally would turn to Gini Wijnaldum.
Yeah, I mean, he made some interesting comments this week, Mourinho, and where he said, this is for the Roma fans. I want players who are Roma fans to be in the team. You know, he's talking about Pellegrini, he's talking about Bove.
Yeah, but mate, last year he'd made a massive deal about Marash Kumbula returning to Albania for a final, you know, and he got 1 minute off the bench. Like, so I'm telling you, how much is smoke and mirrors? You can't trust a word the man says.
No, I know. There's so much of it. I mean, the El Shaarawy question's interesting. Now we've kind of laid out what we think the teams vaguely look like. Does El Shaarawy start a right wing back, especially considering that we know that Acuna is out? Because if I'm Mourinho, I'm thinking attack Alex Tellez. Like, attack, get down that wing. And El Shaarawy's been brilliant. I mean, I know he's played on both sides. I know he's played in various positions. But he just has, once again, you know, he's like Adrian Rabiot. He's like the reincarnated footballer. He keeps coming back. So you're like, hang on, how is he scoring goals again? He's come from nowhere. But yeah, it's been a good season for El Shaarawy. And I'm delighted to see him doing well again.
Yeah, it's cool. It's always useful, isn't it, to have a player that can play like four or five different positions, and the manager trusts him. You know, he can do a job. I didn't really expect to see El Shaarawy turn into this kind of player. I don't think anybody did, really, back when he was the Pharaoh at AC Milan. But he has really changed his game to stay in and amongst it. And he's someone that you can count on. So, I mean, yeah, if I was Roma, I would also be looking at, basically, at Alex Tellez. I would be looking to attack that area. And then defensively, Mourinho is going to know that Sevilla are going to want to get the ball into the box, and they're going to want to try and aim for end the series where possible, you know, just try and use that big noggin of his. Now, Roma are very well equipped to deal with this, I would argue, right? On paper, they have three centre-backs that defend the box very, very well. Smalling is a commander in the centre, and Ibanez has quite the leap. Mancini is a nutter as well, and will just absolutely relish physical duels and battles. So Sevilla's sort of more rough and tumble approach doesn't necessarily work. Yeah. So we go back to what David said about Ivan Rakitic, and you wonder if maybe he is the key to unlocking this, because Roma, as we've talked about through this process, have really started to shut up shop and keep things tight. It is not going to be easy to score against this team. So it will take a bit of magic from midfield, I think, if Enesiri is well marshalled by the back three, which I would expect. And maybe it's, you know, maybe it's a scissor kick from Ocampos in the 70th minute or something. You know, we're talking about, I think the goal, if Sevilla get one, is of this ilk, genuinely.
Yeah, okay. No, I mean, look, it has to be special. We spoke about that with David and John, the fact that Mourinho doesn't concede goals in cup finals. This just doesn't happen, especially in European Cup final. So it does take a bit of magic, because you can't imagine it's going to be a mistake, is probably how I would put it. And with the kind of numbers in that defensive line, I do wonder how Sevilla break that down, especially if they do go, you know, you have Nemanja Matic patrolling in front of this back three. That's a very, very difficult diamond with a star, if you will, to break down from a Sevilla perspective.
It is. And it's also extremely tall. You know, it's not weak from set pieces. It's not weak from aerial stuff. It's difficult to play through. Even Spinazzola's a big man, you know, despite the fact that he glides and moves. If he's fit, I don't know. Again, another injury question mark for Roma to battle heading into this game. But it's a big team. It's really hard to get the better of.
Yeah.
Is it time for predictions?
It's probably time for predictions. So
you go first. I've got something in mind, but you go first. I'll see if I want to change my mind off the back of it.
I think Roma win this final 1-0.
Oh, I agree. I agree.
I'm letting my Mourinho in finals hat go on top of my Sevilla win the Europa League hat, because someone has to break. Something has to break here, right? So they can't both win the trophy. So we know that one of these two records is going to split. And people will be here saying, you're backing someone to beat Sevilla in the Europa League final. And I know it sounds mad, but equally going the other way would suggest beating Jose Mourinho in a European final. So one of the two is going to be mad. I'm going to back the Mourinho madness to win again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling the exact same way. And I feel like it's 1-0. It's a sort of 70 to 75 minute goal, possibly from Dybala off the bench, or El Shaarawy steps up with a really key moment. Like, I don't think the strikers are going to score. I think it's going to be super tight. But I feel like I've said this before. Like, I've got memories right now of me like genuinely certain that Inter Milan would beat Sevilla in the final a couple of years back.
Yeah.
The great Inter Milan team with Romelu Lukaku in his absolute peak form, Barella peak form. And they still lost. So yeah. Maybe I'll just take the other side of the argument just for nice balance, and I'll take Sevilla 1-0. But yeah. My heart's not really in that. But at least this way, one of us is right.
I can't see this being a high scorer. Let's put it that way.
No.
But I do think it's going to be a very, very interesting game of cat and mouse. And with that, I think it's probably time for us to call this a day. Thank you so much to our special guests, David Cartledge and John Solano. Thank you so much to the Ranked Officer, Sam Tai.
Cheers, buddy.
I've been Jack Collins, Knave of Hearts. This has been Ranked FC with your Europa League final preview. Thank you so much for tuning in as ever. And we will see you later in the week. Take it easy, gang. Peace.